This episode is brought to you by Brooklyn Botanic Garden, a stunning 52-acre garden in the heart of Brooklyn, open year-round. Learn more at bbg.org.
This week, Meat and Three is taking you to market and all over the world, from Newfoundland to Tunisia.
Well, a lot of us think of, you know, the British Empire trading things like spices and sugar and silk, but you write that it actually began with salt cod from Newfoundland.
There was a port closure in Tunisia, which was horrible. I mean, it was months, boats just sitting on the water waiting to go, and they couldn't go anywhere.
And we'll learn about how markets have changed, whether because of their customers or the climate.
A few years ago, something around the 10 years, it was totally different.
It almost manifests itself to almost smelling like an old fire pit. When you, when you put it out, it has that sort of charcoal-y smell to it. It's not good for wine.
Join us this week on Meat and Three for our global market tour. And don't forget to subscribe to Meat and Three wherever you listen to podcasts.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some.
Welcome back to the Speakeasy. I'm Souther Teague.
Terrible.
It's not terrible. We're down here in New Orleans, Louisiana, hanging out at 2019's Tales of the Cocktail. I'm sitting in my pretty palatial rental. Have you seen this old place? It's pretty palatial.
I've just seen the bathroom and the kitchen.
That's it.
So far, so good.
Hey, I stayed here two nights before I realized there was a second floor. I'm hanging out with my dear friend, Chris Elford, who used to work with me at Amore Margo and then shipped off to sunny Seattle, Washington for the love of his life, and then has proceeded to open up several ass-kicking bars.
Truth.
Welcome to the Faux Studio.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Truly a long-time listener and also a first-time caller.
This is your first time on the show?
It's my first time on that. Well, we did a little mini thing that I think is collecting dust somewhere.
Probably.
In a shoebox under your bed. Yep. That was at Portland Cocktail Week last year.
That's right.
And a lot's changed since then, so.
A lot has changed since then. Well, a lot's changed in general. And, you know, I know you definitely at least tell me that you listen to the show sometimes. So you kind of got a feel for the format, how it goes. So kind of usually start talking about, like, what got you going. And, you know, I'd like to even go all the way back to, like, comedy. Comedy's what got you to New York City, right?
Yeah, it is. I was doing stand-up comedy and very much enjoying it, and I enjoy writing and wanted to pursue it in New York, and then kind of needed to get a job when I got into town, got hired in a cocktail bar at Lewis 649, which is where I met Tristan, which is how I got the job in Amore Margo. But yeah, it was the first place I applied, and I didn't have any cocktail experience, but I was really into beer, and they wanted somebody who knew beer, and honestly, I just found that once I got behind the bar in New York that it scratched a lot of the same itches that doing stand-up did, you know, kind of a captive audience.
People were laughing at you.
People are laughing. People are laughing at me. They're laughing near me also. I feel like between the writing, like writing menus, you know, the creative aspect of creating drinks, and kind of the self-deprecating sort of aspect that I feel like a lot of good bartenders have, you know, like the ability to laugh at yourself when you screw something up. I feel like those things are all pretty, you know, like in concert with the skill of doing stand-up or writing comedy, for sure.
Yeah, I know you have a lot of punny names and connectivity things on your menu that, you know, like connect things to visceral reactions for the guests to have, and I can definitely see how that would scratch that same itch. And plus, you know, everyone says it, and I take it with a grain of salt, but you kind of are, you know, the focal point of the audience, as it were, when you're behind a bar, so I'm sure that scratches that itch as well. But so you got behind the bar at Lewis 649.
Yep.
And you were serving... It wasn't a craft cocktail bar.
Yeah,
at that
it was.
Time.
It was a craft cocktail bar, oh, yeah, for sure. It was. I mean, the first menu that I stepped into there, I think there were about 60 cocktails on the menu, and it was this spec sheet, this godforsaken spec sheet that was had all the drinks were printed kind of straight across in like an Excel sheet style thing, and they were all about a 3-point font, including, you know, very last you'd get to what the glassware was and what the garnish was. But yeah, I just kind of got thrown into it when a handful of bartenders left the bar, and I think it was a Thursday night, and I got back there, and I almost served someone. We used vodka bottles for reused vodka bottles for our simple syrup bottles, and I did straw taste before I sent out a simple syrup martini on my first night there. You know, and yeah, it was too sweet. It was unbalanced.
Yes.
Yeah.
2 ounces of simple syrup up against an ounce of vermouth.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Lovely. It was a cordial of sorts.
Just as dry as you ordered it, sir.
Yeah, but I got into the service industry the same way that you did, which was cooking. I was a cook at a barbecue restaurant in Richmond, Virginia, cooking ribs. Did a lot of microwaving. Side dishes, making barbecue sandwiches.
The micro chef.
Yeah.
Or micro station.
I shudder to think at what a bad employee I was back then, to be honest with you. But
it all makes you into what you are today, right?
For sure. I think that sometimes I find myself shaking my head or rolling my eyes at, you know, things that my employees do now. And if I'm really being honest with myself, I'm just reaping what I sowed, you know?
Yeah, like, yeah, of course. There's definitely that sort of like dad aspect of it, right? You're looking at your kids and thinking like, those are the assholes. And then you think, well, I guess I did the same thing, maybe worse.
If any of my employees are listening, I never think of you as assholes. I'm very grateful for everyone that works for us, but I do. Yeah, I mean, it's all part of a journey, and I'm sure that someday I'll look back on my early years as a bar owner and roll my eyes at myself then too. That's all kind of part of the process. One of the things that we end up talking about, not to get philosophical too quickly, but one of the things that I end up talking about a lot and thinking about a lot is curiosity, and the fact that I think that great chefs and great bartenders are very curious people. And I think that we have a tendency as we grow in our career to lose some of that curiosity because everyone is feeding you what's partially a lie and partially a truth, but everyone's feeding you this this notion that you've arrived and that, you know, you don't make any mistakes really.
Right.
The seminar that I've done a couple times, I did it at Portland Cocktail Week last year, and I did it at Toronto Cocktail Conference, which you came to.
It was red.
Yeah.
The Portland one.
Yeah.
It was red.
So it's called A Culture of Curiosity, and the idea is that you remain relevant throughout your career by maintaining and cultivating and kind of rewarding a sense of curiosity and a sense of wondering kind of what everything is. And I think that I interact with so many, you know, bartenders and chefs who have made it who, you know, I want to know all about them, and we get into a conversation and it's clear that they don't care to know anything about me or my bars or my city or, you know, really anything. And I'm just like, this is a person who's probably in many ways like plateauing in their career. I can guarantee it.
Do you find that they're very interested in telling you about them though?
Yeah,
it's probably. It's just a one-sided conversation.
If you are a curious people, you're going to ask people about who they are. And I think that it's one thing that you and I have made careers on is being curious about the average person that walks into our bar. You know, we don't ask people if they've been in before, how did you find out about us, et cetera, all of those questions that I know that you and I ask probably verbatim to our guests on opposite coasts.
Yep.
We don't do that, you know, for our health. It's because we're curious to get this information from people. And I think that, you know, you can, on one hand, it feeds your soul because if you're a curious person, you get to dig into more deeper layers of life, basically. But it's also information that you can use. You know, I know more about my guests because of that, and
me too.
I make decisions based on it.
So do I. I mean, it's still. I know what you're referring to is and more. It's still a pinnacle thing that we do when someone comes in and we don't recognize them. We say, "Hey, is your first time in?" And then their answer will determine what the next question is. But if it's no, then you say, "Well, how did you hear about us?" And we can glean a lot of information from those answers. And it's.
Do you remember one time when someone came in and I think it was you and I were working, or maybe it was me and Nick Bennett back in the day, but someone came in and we're like, "Hey, have you been in before?" "No." "Oh, cool. How'd you hear about us?" "Yelp." "Well, what did Yelp tell you about us?" "Oysters." And we were like, we don't sell oysters.
We never have.
Yeah, I think you're on a different page.
It's somewhere in Yelp still that Amor has a pool table. So every now and again, amazing, someone comes in and asks where the pool table is, and the standard response of the staff at this point is just, it's out for service.
Rob Roy, my wife owns a bar called Rob Roy, a classic cocktail bar in Seattle that this August turns 10 years old. Pretty big, huge monument for them. But
that's massive, yeah.
People, it has a reputation as being a cigar bar, which it isn't. Cigar smoking has never been legal in bars since this bar has been open. And people are just get really, really, really upset when they realize that they can't come in and drink some scotch and puff on a cigar bar in Seattle, like the healthiest city in the country.
The thing is, nobody goes back and cleans up the internet.
No, yeah,
true. All that stuff just lives on forever. And then you have to, you know, if you're in the joke, you can be in the joke. But if you're not, you're just, we don't have a pool table. Look around. There's not even room for a pool table.
There would not be room for a pool table in there. Maybe ice hockey. I mean, air hockey. But, yeah.
I mean, I love that part of your philosophy about curiosity. And I feel like that's definitely led you to do the things that you do, which is constantly pursuing education. Right? So you got behind the bar and you were kind of fumbling around, but you then dove in and dug around for information so you'd be better at it.
Well, I was way in over my head when I got hired at, well, really when I got behind the bar at Lewis, I was in over my head, and then I felt the same way at Amore. One of the phrases I've tried to stop saying is fake it till you make it, because I think that acknowledges something that's not necessarily true, which is that you're faking it. I think if you have a genuine interest in something and you're trying to learn, there's no faking it about it. You know, yeah, you can stand behind a bar and serve people and not know everything that is, you know, on your back bar. That's a journey, and a journey that you have to be on. But yeah, I mean, as far as our bars go, you know, I obviously worked at Amore and opened Proletariat in New York as well.
Right, because you really dove headlong into the beer thing.
Yep. I had a hard time breaking into the beer industry in New York, and then again in Seattle. It's a lot more closed off, and I think one of the reasons is that in the beer world, if your job is working in bars, at best you're probably a curator, and or maybe a docent or something like that, like someone who's really good at describing things, but you're not a maker. In the cocktail world, you have to be a maker. And you or I could walk into a cocktail bar, or anybody listening to this podcast could walk into a cocktail bar and probably look at a person making a drink and tell the general level of skill that that person has.
Right.
In a beer bar, you can't do that, really. You would have to really dig in conversation to kind of like get an idea of where the person is. And at the end of the day, what you would be talking about is the only subjective sense, taste, or taste and smell. You know, that's the only sense that you and I could, you know, both taste the same thing. And one of us would be like, I think that tastes like butterscotch. And one of us would be like, I think that tastes like
German chocolate.
Sure. He's just listing our desserts from last night. Go, Sean.
A pineapple upside down cake.
Yeah, I'm getting notes of pineapple upside down cake. We did order 3 desserts. But I don't know. I think that's it's just hard to tell in the beer world if someone actually can play. You know what I mean? And honestly, I think that there's a lot of people. I think the beer world is probably 20 years behind the cocktail world in the focus on hospitality. I go to very few breweries or beer bars where I am made to feel at home or at all special or cared for. I think that's an enormous thing that's missing in a lot of places. And when I find it in a beer bar, that place is like becomes my temple. You know, obviously Corey Bonfiglio does a wonderful job of that at Beer Street. Mm-hmm. I know he's been on the show before.
Yep.
And y'all talked about it. And I just wanted to say I thought of it first. No. there's a place in Seattle that does a really good job of it, a brewery called Holy Mountain. And they're making some of the best beer in the country. And they just hire the sweetest people. And, you know, it's a full-on just turn and burn brewery. There are large groups of people walking in there, and they get enormous after work crowds, but they hire really, really, really friendly people. And it's just, it makes people want to come back, whether or not they know that's why. I mean, the beer is also good. That doesn't hurt, but you can sell a mediocre product and have really good people and be in business.
Indeed. And the opposite is not true. You can't have an exceptional product and mediocre people.
Well, unfortunately, yes, right. I mean, I think in the beer world specifically,
not for longevity anyway.
Right. I think in the beer world, you are finding a lot of places that are legendary because they have bad service or because they're like, you know, almost like the dive bar kind of aspect where people can kind of like be a dick to you and it's like, but in those situations, the guest has to be in on the joke. You know what I mean? It really needs to be like your shtick, basically. You can't just be a dick to people randomly and expect them to keep coming back in.
And give you money.
I wish that was different in the beer world, but I think the cocktail community is doing a really, honestly, a pretty wonderful job of growing in that area in the hospitality realm, which is all that matters, honestly, is how we make people feel. We only get one shot at life as far as we know. You know what I mean? You might only get one shot at interacting with the person that's sitting in front of you, and to squander that and make them, you know, feel anything other than just goodness in life is a mistake, I think.
Wow. Well, that's a great place to pause just for a second. We're going to pause and take a break and hear from our sponsors. We'll be right back with more with Chris Elford from Seattle, Washington, right here on the Speakeasy, live from New Orleans.
This episode is brought to you by Brooklyn Botanic Garden, a stunning 52-acre garden in the heart of Brooklyn featuring spectacular plant displays year-round. Make the most of the last days of summer on Thursday, August 22nd at Brooklyn Botanic Garden's Beer and Bocce Benefit, a one-of-a-kind garden party featuring lawn games, live music, and unlimited beer tastings by some of Brooklyn's top beer makers. Proceeds from the Beer and Bocce Benefit provide essential support for the garden's educational and community programs. Learn more about Brooklyn Botanic Garden at bbg.org.
And we're back on the Speakeasy with our guest today, Chris Elford from Seattle, Washington. We've been talking about curiosity, learning. We've been talking about being generous and kind to your guests. Listen, man, you moved away from New York, and you wound up in Seattle, and you cracked open some of the country's best bars. Like, how do you do that in such short order?
Well, I really like creating. I receive input when I go to bars, you know, and I got to work as a brand ambassador. I got to travel the country and the world and was visiting all these bars and kind of just taking little bits and pieces here and there. We opened No Anchor in September of 2016 in a former convenience store in Belltown. And we received the James Beard nomination that first year for Best New Restaurant in America, which was huge and put us on the map in a way that we didn't think was possible. This is a beer bar with what I would call elevated food, Pacific Northwest food. But
relatively small. Right.
Yeah, it's about a 30-seat spot.
Right.
I really like small,
me too,
intimate places. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's designed to kind of mimic a curiosity shop, which honestly I'd never thought of until this moment. That curiosity is kind of my thing, and that I opened a bar that's like an oddities and curiosity shop.
But yeah, you got like those cabinet. You get the Wunderkammen.
Yeah, we have a bunch of
curiosity cabinet.
Yeah, I don't speak French, but. But we have all kinds of, you know, osteology and bones, you knucklehead.
Yeah.
We have this really cool kind of entomology display. It's bugs, mm-hmm, different insects. You understand? In
that's
a box.
That's what you want to see, right? When you go into a restaurant,
they're not it's alive. A
box
or
of bugs. Just,
yeah, bug box. Actually, the thing that creeped people out the most. We didn't do any of what they call in the curiosities world wet specimens. We didn't have any like pig
nothing
fetuses
in jars.
In jars. Yeah. But there was a baby doll that was missing I think its leg had fallen off or its arm had fallen off. And then we just like rubber banded the arm in its other arm. So it was just kind of holding its own limb and just staring lifelessly out into the abyss. And a lot of people got pretty weirded out by that one. And we ended up swapping it out with something else. I also have my Amoria Margo baseball card in that display.
The only one that's ever left.
I know. Sorry, I didn't know there was a policy on it. a guy who used to bartend with us, our dear friend Ari Form, who you, I'm sure, mention very often.
As often as I can.
He made baseball cards out of historic baseball cards. He found for each bartender at Amore Margo a baseball player that looked like them, and then with a razor cut out letters that he could use to spell their name over the person's actual name on the baseball card. And he did an exceptional job at finding people that look like us, one. But two, the cards, and I know you dig this too, he would find cards that were in some way autobiographical in nature for us specifically.
Exactly.
So for me, it was a Kurt Gibson card when he was playing for the Detroit Tigers, which I'm a huge Tigers fan. Yours was a guy from Atlanta.
I was born there.
Yep.
He finds a historical significance to each of us and our doppelganger, and then puts our name on the cards and frames them. So they're all on display at Amore Margo from when he worked there.
Yeah, except for mine.
He also mentioned all the time that his greatest challenges were, of course, finding baseball players that looked like the ladies who worked at Amore Margo. He had to find guys who looked like they were in drag, and he did.
He did.
And he did.
Really good job of it. So we opened.
I'll put a picture up on the Speakeasy podcast Instagram so we can see what we're talking about.
Sweet. I'll send you a picture of old Kirk Gibson. So we opened No Anchor in 2016, so it's September of 2016, and then 6 months later, almost to the day, we opened Navy Strength next door, our tiki bar. And the reason that we opened these two spots simultaneously was basically the Seattle market was changing so quickly that we genuinely felt that by the time we got one of these bars open and kind of settled in, you know, maybe a couple years down the line, by the time we went to open our second thing, one, the concept would have been taken and explored by someone else in the same neighborhood already, or two, the rent would be
exorbitant,
too damn high.
The rent is too damn high.
The rent is too damn high. I think we all agree.
We do.
So we opened Navy Strength a short time later, and it was well received. Navy Strength is our tropical cocktail bar. And it's kind of our own little, corner of Belltown. You know, it's inspired by Paradise. It kind of has shipwreck vibes to it. There's a lot of kind of beautiful tile and floral wallpaper. And, you know, it's not a tiki bar in the traditional sense, but the average person would certainly refer to it as a tiki bar. And
sure, it's got a lot of color and texture and fabric and
exactly
ropes everywhere and just has that look.
One of the things I'm most proud about with Navy Strength is that while we use a lot of really out there ingredients in our drinks, we don't list ingredients on the menu. We list a handful of ingredients for each cocktail, and then in some way, in using turns of phrase, we explain to people the overall vibe of the drink. When we make drinks that have 11 or 12 ingredients in them, if we list all of those things, one, people don't have to, they need to know the main things, but by the time they get to ingredient six, they've already decided whether or not they're going to drink this drink.
Yep.
And I think it was actually on the Cure menu in New Orleans was the first time I saw, because they will list ingredients and then they'll list like an explanation, mm-hmm. basically of the ingredients for the average person, which I think is so thoughtful. You're not treating, it means that a person doesn't have to be an expert to walk into your bar and enjoy themselves.
Correct.
So we took that even farther in each drink description is like a little one sentence story in some way. One of my favorites, we have a drink called the Fortress of Solid Dudes. And the Fortress of Solid Dudes in this cocktail, first of all, Ancho Verde is the base spirit. The Ancho Chili Liqueur is the base spirit, which is a very challenging ingredient to work with in any increment, much less as the base spirit in a cocktail. But it's the base is split between Ancho Verde, Jaffard apricot, and Campari. So you have three liqueurs as the base spirit in this thing. The citrus is lemon juice. We put our homemade coconut cream in it, which we sweeten with maple syrup, and it's just freaking delicious. And then there is absinthe, which I put in pretty much everything. There's Peychaud's bitters. There's orange blossom water, a handful of other things. But this, if we listed all of those things, we would lose people halfway through the drink. So the way that the drink is described on the menu is something like, Ancho Chile and Apricot meet at a house party and bond over their love of everything from Campari to comics. Life is weird. And it kind of gives you this idea that, well, first of all, Ancho, Campari, and Apricot are all mentioned. So you know kind of what you're getting into. but also it kind of sets the stage that they're at this house party, so maybe the drink is kind of fun. You know, it talks about bonding over your love of comics, which Fortress of Solid Dudes is a reference to the Fortress of Solitude, Superman's.
Oh, I didn't pick that up.
For the average person, I'm pretty sure that the Venn diagram of comic nerds and people that listen to this podcast is it pretty much just looks like a circle.
It's a circle,
imagine.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's I think it's a fun and special way to announce these things, and we can tell people what's in all of the cocktails if they need to hear it. But I find the average person is they dig the mystery, you know.
I agree, especially when you go into a place that's as sort of again vibrant and colorful and inviting as your bar is. It's a place where you're already walking in the door. You're already ready to you're open. You're as open for business as the bar is.
Yep.
So like I think that those cues on the menu are good leaders.
I think one of the only, it's kind of a sad thing for me to admit to myself, but I do think that because we don't list everything and we have this really like nonchalant, relaxed thing, I do think that sometimes people don't realize the quality of what they're getting. Because I think for some people, you have to like spell that out for them. Mm. And it takes a certain amount of humility for us to just be okay with that. Like there are definitely people that come in there and look at the menu and are like, they don't feel like they're at a craft cocktail bar, so they'll just order like a shot and a beer. Totally fine. They probably would order a cocktail if they felt like they were at a mixology temple, but we disguised, in my opinion, one of the country's best cocktail bars as a place that might not even be a cocktail bar, which I think is special in and of itself. But you know, we try and communicate to people that what they're getting is really special, but we do get a lot of questions from people like, hey, is this good? Like, are the drinks here good? And we're like, yes, they're good.
Well, you spoke about your James Beard nomination, which you didn't win.
We did not even make the shortlist. In fact, although we've gotten a second nomination, which we didn't make the shortlist for either. But
so why
the first one was for Best Restaurant, and the second one was for Outstanding Bar Program, which is not usual for
a beer bar
wow. to get on. And that one really like meant a lot to me. Just that I don't even know who nominates people for these things, but someone out there really likes No Anchor and really appreciates what we're doing. And honestly, I didn't know until pretty recently who nominated us for our Tales Award.
Which is what I was about to say. So then you opened up six months later, right next door, this sort of hidden in plain sight cocktail bar mm-hmm. that you think maybe gets slightly even under addressed by your guests. But then you went on to win Best New American Cocktail Bar at Tales of the Cocktail.
Correct.
Do you have a big sign that says that? So when people come in, they don't say, are the drinks good here?
We don't have a big sign that says it.
A little sign in the bathroom or something?
We have an award on the wall, which I know we'll probably touch on at some point.
We're about to touch on it right now.
We have an award on the wall. We have the envelope framed on the wall as well. It's outside of the bathroom, so I guess it's not the sexiest place to put it, but we've only got so many walls. And then there's an article on the wall that says, you know, from the Seattle Times, that says Navy Strength just won this national cocktail award. But
international?
Yeah. Well, it was Best American Cocktail Bar, so.
Sure.
You know, I guess you can make the case that the melting pot that this country is, that, I mean, Anu, my wife and business partner Anu, her, you know, her parents are immigrants from India, and I'm an immigrant from Canada. So it feels maybe a little bit more international for that reason, but that really, really, really blew us away. I kept telling myself that we weren't going to win because I've been to the awards so many times, and little bars like ours do not win those awards. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I've just never seen it happen. The people that we were up against are people that I, not only do I esteem them, but you know, their bars are places that I visit every time that I'm in their city. You know, I was scared to death the first time that I went to Attaboy. Well, then it was Milk and Honey. But the Attaboy in Nashville, which is a wonderful bar, they were up for that award too. And I was just like, those guys are gods to me. You know what I mean? Right. I remember when Mickey first came into Amore Amargo, and you know, I think I sounded like the pimply faced kid from The Simpsons talking to him. I'm like, here's your Americano, sir.
But it's true, right? You're up there against these titans, right? And you're being heralded by your you know, your contemporaries and your colleagues. Yeah, it's amazing. And then your name got called, and so you went up on the stage.
Yep, went up on stage, and our lives changed. If to this day, if I watch that video, of them announcing it, because I was taking video at the time, you know, just in case, and the collective gasp at our table still brings me to tears. It was the most powerful thing that's ever happened to me. I never expect anything like that to happen again. People work their entire careers and don't get to experience what I got to experience 1 year into owning my first bars. And I just want all the people that voted for us to know how special it is to me.
Thank you.
Well, let's talk about that. What did it change? Like, was there an immediate notice of change?
It tripled our business overnight. And to be honest,
like
with
literally
you,
overnight.
Overnight, we had to immediately hire people, and we had friends, you know, coming in to help us out on shift, who didn't even work there. We were so busy. And that was that's the first thing that these awards do for you. I know that people say, you know, a lot of lists and awards are arbitrary, and I really do think that you're never as good as the best things people say about you, and you're never as bad as the worst things people say about you. Except for maybe you. But but it really does affect the bottom line, and I, as a small business owner, have become a natural you know, just advocate and cheerleader for other small business owners, because I know how hard it is. And I think it's really wonderful to be able to have the opportunity to start a business, but, you know, to continue to exist and climb. It's, you know, it's one of the reasons that Amor is so special, is that it was this really niche place in the East Village that was almost in like a forgotten about space. It was almost just an overlooked space. And the fact that this is grown and been cultivated and cared for over time to now being on multiple shortlists at Tails and awards like that. That's just massively special. And we did talk earlier about the fact that the awards are plates, which I feel like we need to talk about.
Yeah, the award itself is an actual plate. It's a crystal clear plate.
At Tales of the Cocktail.
That says Tales of the Cocktail, Spirited Awards, whatever year, and of course the name of the winner on the plate. It's like a 12-inch
crystal
Riedel plate.
Yep. For cocktails.
What's the first thing you do with your plate?
Well, you drink champagne off it, and it gets all over you. It gets all over you. I've drank a lot of champagne off that plate. It's pretty precariously.
I would guess that you drank some champagne off of there, because I'm betting that most of it doesn't get drank. It slushes everywhere.
It goes all over your face for sure. Yeah, I think the fact that they do it on a plate is kind of, I think it's weird too. I'm with you.
It's also, I mean, I'm not knocking the plate. I'm hoping to get one. But I will say this. It's also not very photogenic.
Oh, it's hard
to take a picture of it. To read, right? Like, you go to a bar that's got one and you're like, I can't read which one it is.
Yeah, I agree with all of those things. I don't really know what to fucking do about it.
But well, we're doing it right now. We're maybe dropping the seed into the Solomons. You know, the Solomons took over Tales of the Cocktail. Maybe they'll make it into a goblet or a glass or a shaker or a mixing glass or something.
Yeah. Do you remember when we won some kind of award at Amoria Margo? It's just one of the, you know, city links or like
best single focus bar.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
And it was, and the prize was a shaker. And I just remember we took a picture. I think that was Nick Bennett and I just holding the shaker, like, what the heck do I do with this thing?
Well, that was especially funny because the prize was a shaker and the bar that won it doesn't use shakers at all.
Yeah.
But at least that makes sense to the genre. You can still stir a drink in there.
You know what? I don't use mixing glasses about that anymore.
Thing. What happened?
Have we talked about this?
No, what do you use?
I just use my small
pints?
Tins.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you kind of have to babysit a little bit more because it doesn't really have the weight. But to be honest with you, most of the bars that I've designed, the setups are so kind of concise that I have no use for a single-use piece of equipment that's breakable.
Understood.
Anymore. But they're pretty. I think it's awesome that they've gone down in price significantly. Mm-hmm. I remember back in the day, they were $50-$60, and now you can get them for $14.
Right. But. Well, you know, Dave Arnold would argue that the metal tin is better for thermal transfer.
Yeah,
At existing conditions and back at Booker and Dax, that we only stirred in metal over there.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if Uncle Dave is doing it,
then everybody should get on board.
Honestly.
So let's talk about more of the things you're doing. So you've opened now, according to this podcast so far, you've opened two bars. But now there's a new bar, a third bar. And where did you plant it? Smack in the middle of the other two. So basically, now they're just connected.
Yeah. We opened a bar called Vinny's Raw Bar. It was our coffee shop, which was a miserable failure. And the reason that I think my wife doesn't really love for me to talk about this that much, because we just come from different backgrounds and I feel more comfortable with it than she does. So if she's listening to this, she won't listen to this.
Yeah. skip ahead.
But if she was, I'm sorry, lo siento. But
the coffee shop failed.
It failed miserably.
Spectacular failure.
And, you know, it just lost money for a year and a half, and we tried different things. But honestly, we're such a small company. I mean, it's really just my wife and I kind of running the show for all of these places. And remember, my wife also has Rob Roy.
Right.
So we're, you know, exhausted, but we're doing this for our future, and we're doing it because we wanted to create. And so we had this coffee shop, and our idea was these baristas would be there. They can be cranking out coffee, and then they can also be doing the juicing and syrups for Navy Strength, which is great. They're kind of doing double duty. Well, what we found was that in the end, we ended up hiring people who weren't especially great at doing the prep side of things, and they also weren't especially great at doing the, you know, they were kind of just whelmers, I think is the Danny Meyer term, but some very lovely people worked for us, but it just wasn't, it was our failure in leadership, not their failure at execution. But after a year and a half, I had a conversation at Portland Cocktail Week. I was walking with Shelby Allison from Lost Lake, mm-hmm. and I was telling her about this coffee shop that's just keeping me up at night. Not in the way you think, not because I was drinking too much coffee.
Not in the good way.
Because it was haunting my freaking dreams. And she was just like, why don't you close it? Just close it and open something that you actually like. And she told me the story of what is now Stranger in Paradise, but it used to be called Thank You on the side of Lost Lake in Chicago, which last year when we won Best New American Cocktail Bar, they won Best American Cocktail Bar. They had a place called Thank You that was it was basically a Chinese takeout place, and it wasn't particularly successful, and they had issues with their cooks and all of these things, and eventually a fire happened is how they ended up closing it. The place caught on fire because the cooks got so drunk they left something on and it caught on fire overnight. So they closed it and reopened it as Stranger in Paradise, which is their, I know this is an audio podcast, but Souther is looking into the whiskey that he's drinking as if something has fallen into
it. It looks like something's fallen in there. I don't know what that is. It's not going to stop me from drinking it.
But anyways, no, nor should it. That'll be the cleanest that particle has ever been. Anyway, she was like, you should close it. They opened Stranger in Paradise in their space that used to be Thank You. And it's, you know, a place where they do all of their pop-ups. In fact, we went and did one in January, which was wonderful. And that was the impetus that I needed from someone outside of my immediate circle to be like, yo, close that shit. And so we looked around and we were like, cool, let's open something that we love. And to be honest with you, beer at this point in my career still feels like work. Cocktails very much feel like work. And I take, you know, learning and staying abreast of both of those industries really seriously, which means that the thing that I drink to relax is wine, specifically natural wine, which I'm very excited about. And so we opened a natural wine and raw bar, seafood focused bar called Vinny's. It's only 28 seats. It's open 25 hours a week.
Only 28, but you said No Anchor is 30.
No Anchor's 30, but it has,
and it's
like
on the James Beard list.
Yeah, but
twice.
Yeah, that's true. No Anchor has, Vinny's feels more, like more of a closet. No Anchor has 30 seats plus a couple standing bars plus a 30-seat patio outside. So on its best day, it could be, you know, you can fit 70 people inside and outside there. Vinny's, the max that we can do is, you know, 30 people probably. But yeah, it's been really fun so far, and it's been cool, like, stretching our legs in the natural wine world. Once again, we're pretty much just curators, but we have a small cocktail list there. It's the lowest waste cocktail program I've ever been a part of. Almost everything, I'm trying to think of something that is used on our menu outside of just the booze that goes into the drinks that is not a byproduct of something else that we've created somewhere else in-house. All of our wine that goes bad gets turned into vermouth. We do two different types of vermouth, and all of them are infused with the scraps of things that are juiced or made into syrups at Navy Strength, our tiki bar. The the garnishes, like when we peel things with citrus, everything is expressed and discarded. And it gets discarded into a, meaning you express your citrus over the drink so that you get the aromatic component, and then it goes into a little bucket of citrus scrap, and all of that is harvested each night and goes to back to Navy Strength, and they turn it into their oleosacrums. We don't serve things on new ice, meaning we don't shake a drink or stir a drink and then pour it over fresh ice, because the ice that we have in the glass we feel like still has value. It's still cold. It's just not as pretty. So what we'll do is we'll stir or shake a drink and then pop it over the ice that it was, correction. We will stir a drink and pop it into the glass with the bulk of the ice that we stirred with, and then we'll add one or maybe two new ice cubes on top so that it has the appearance of something that looks good. And then our shake... Oh, sorry, that's my alarm. We probably can't play this on the show, but
yeah,
that's my alarm.
Not enough seconds. What? Okay, wait. So keep going with that.
So then
shaken drinks.
So shaken drinks, we don't serve shaken drinks on ice because I still have standards and we still want to fine strain things. So we are discarding that ice, but we try to shake with kind of minimal ice, get the right texture, get the right temperature, and then, you know, pop it into a cocktail glass. Not on new ice. A lot of this work, the heavy lifting of this research, was done by Claire Sprouse and Chad Arnholt, who are,
love those guys,
are just like people who I have just such immense respect for. And my Facebook memory today actually was us at Tails 5 years ago drinking at the Aaron Rose. And I sent Claire a text and I was like, I'm so pumped that we're still friends. But they have really taken that bull by the horns, mm-hmm, as far as just improving the realm of sustainability in the cocktail world. And
sure,
I'm a follower in this, but I did finally get to create a program where I get to use all the things that I've been learning. And all of the, we don't even have lime juice there. Like our shaken drinks are, we use a wine that's gone bad as the base, and then we acidify them and sweeten them and make them into these, like, essentially it's wine sour mix, honestly, is the unsexy way of saying it. We call them, you know, we'll call it like a lime Riesling cordial. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we're just shaking. And then all my drinks are 2-bottle pickups because I'm just basically batching everything together and making these ingredients as one kind of whole shelf stable thing.
Amazing.
Yeah. Super fun.
Can't wait to come and see that. You know, one of the things I do at Honeybees and some over at Blue Quarter is we shake all of our shaken drinks with a very small amount of pebble ice. Mm-hmm. We shake it until that ice is totally melted. So you get the aeration, you get the dilution because that ice melts.
Like
you get
whip shaking.
It's whip shake,
yeah,
for sure.
Cocky Frank Tills taught me whip shake.
Yeah, whip shaking and dirty pour, right? Then pour all of that into the glass because there's nothing left, right? So that ice is the dilution. So it's just one use and it's gone.
My wife heard someone at a cocktail competition recently call that the Elford pour. They were like, the Elford dump.
Dump. funny when I picture you. Not so funny when I picture anew.
But yeah, the dirty dump, some people call it. You just shake it and dump the whole thing in, but it's a really efficient way to make drinks, and you're not wasting just not only the extra water, but the extra energy that it took to make that ice.
Yeah, well, I also really enjoy the fact that we sort of measure it out. You know, like when you do a blended drink, you measure out the ice, right? So we measure it out in such a way that when we shake it, it's just gone. So even that dirty dump, the ice is gone. Yeah, the dilution is correct.
Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Because, you know, ice is a commodity, man, and, you know, can't just be literally burning it up.
Well, you know, for us, we can't do it. We only use cubed ice at Vinny's because all of our crushed ice goes onto, you know, seafood towers and oyster platters, and then it's also the same ice machine that cranks out all of the drinks for all the ice for the drinks at Navy Strength, which are almost all on crushed ice. So that machine is getting a significant amount of work. And it's a workhorse. Hoshizaki's.
Hoshizaki, baby.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're running towards the end of the show here, but I wanted to talk about something we talked about off air. Mm-hmm. And it kind of ties a lot of these things together. Your curiosity, your continuing education in cocktails and beer and now into wine. You're thinking about opening a brewery.
Yeah. We are. When is this going to... When? How long does it take these things to air?
I mean, I'll air it when you want me to air it.
Okay. I'm opening a brewery. We're working on it. We found a really cool space in Seattle. I'm partnering with one of, in my opinion, one of the best brewers, not just in the country, but in the world, whose name I won't drop here because, it just hasn't been announced yet, and it wouldn't be fair for me to blow up their spot just yet, but first of all, it's I'm excited to be partnering with a woman in the craft beer industry, which there's woefully low numbers of, you know, not just women, but people of color and you know, LGBTQ people represented in the craft beer world. It's a very, you know, cis white male dominated world, and that makes it pretty fucking boring, to be honest with you. I'd much rather hang out with cocktail people because that world just feels really diverse to me. But the brew is going to be called Here Today, and our idea is, I think I was telling you last night, our idea is like celebrating the here today and basically ignoring the gone tomorrow, just being excited for each day, being excited for each guest experience, and you know, in the same way that we did at No Anchor, like really focusing on hospitality and making people feel really welcome. It's going to be right down on the waterfront on the Puget Sound in Seattle, which is, it's an area that's being redeveloped right now, and we could not be more excited to be cranking out some probably pretty strange and out there beers by many standards. Certainly the tourists who are coming off the cruise ships down there, you know, might raise some eyebrows at some of the things that we're doing, but we're going to be doing some fermentation in historic vessels. So we have some giant oak fooders that we're bringing in. And then we have a guy who's making life-size amphora out of Oregon, of course, Oregon, because that's where things like that would happen, you know, Portlandia. But this guy makes life-size amphora, which are just giant clay jugs, which I don't think too many people have fermented beer in those in the last few thousand years, but everything used to be fermented in them, and, you know, before we had glass, obviously. So I'm really pumped. I'm excited to transition from curator to maker in the beer world. And, you know, I'm not going to be the technical brewer. My purview is basically the front of house, but I'm very excited to learn under this brewer. And, you know, I used to be a distiller when I lived in New York. I worked at Kings County Distillery and the Brooklyn Navy Yard. And definitely, I know that that type of work is not my strength. My strength is in talking to people and communicating ideas. I'm not a great, like, long-term detail-oriented worker, or at least I wasn't until I owned my own bars. But yeah, I'm really, really, really pumped about getting in there and creating something that hopefully is gonna be like a lasting fixture of a newly redeveloped waterfront. You know, it's like kind of like when they redid the High Line in New York. In fact, I think the same guy is designing the bulk of the kind of park system for the Seattle waterfront. But our brewery is going to be in there, so it should be really cool. I'm excited for you to come see it.
I'll be right there, day one. Well, dude, thanks so much for taking time out of your busy, busy Tales of the Cocktail to come sit down and chat with me.
Hell yeah.
On the Speakeasy. I'm so, like, really, you know, charmed by everything that you do, and having been able to be part of it in the beginning and to watch it continue to grow. And also, we didn't even mention here on the show, but, like, Chris Elford is the creator of the Sharpie mustache.
Truth.
Yeah, which has been on the menu at Amore Margo for, I guess, pushing 6 years now.
Yeah, more. No, 7 years.
Seven?
Yeah, it's been
written up in fall 2012. Bunches of books, including mine. It's been on menus all over the country and world. I've had people reach out to me and ask if they could use it, and I say sure, as long as you give credit to Chris.
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, that drink has certainly done some heavy lifting in my career, but, you know, I just wanted to say two other things, one of which is the impact that you've had on my career, and obviously we've been friends together since, you know, those OG Amore Margo days, but, you know, you've just been such a massive influence on me, and I still, you know, like, quote you daily and when I'm teaching these people in Seattle, which I think is just super awesome, and I hope that you know what an effect that you've had on me. And then the other thing is, to your listeners, I run all the social media accounts for the bars, and I want everyone listening to know that, you know, if you find yourself in Seattle, you have a home at No Anchor and Navy Strength, and I will gladly shake your hand and probably cheers you with a beverage. And I just think if people happen to make it out to that remote corner of the country, that it helps to have, like, a, you know, a home base or a place.
Safe place to land, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's outstanding. So is that the best way if someone wants to get in touch with you, through social for all the bars?
Yeah, this the at No Anchor Bar, at Navy Strength Seattle, at Vinny's Raw Bar, and I'm just at Chris Elford.
Dude, this has been great.
Hell yeah.
Thank you so much, buddy.
Yeah, buddy. Cheers.
Cheers to you.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Want more of the Speakeasy? Follow us and ask questions on Instagram at Speakeasy Podcast or on Twitter at Speakeasy Radio. You can find Damon at Damon Bolte, and you can find me at Creative Drunk on all platforms. Take a moment to write us a review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite platform, and give us a star rating, 5 if possible. If you're visiting New York City or a resident, stop by the studio and hang out with us during an episode. Reach out beforehand and make sure we'll be here. We'd love to see you. And please support our show by visiting heritageradionetwork.org and clicking on the beating heart to donate.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.